David Jacobs, or I should say, David Jacobs CBE.
Yes, that's rather nice, isn't it? That was a very great surprise. Just a few weeks ago, I must say, to receive an award like that is very startling. It's quite extraordinary. When you get an award, and as I've never had one before, I didn't know what the form was, I got a letter from the Prime Minister's office on May the 3rd, and it said on Her Majesty's Service, it was a large brown envelope with a window in it, and I thought it was a tax return sign. But there it said Prime Minister's office in the corner, and I opened it up, and there it was, offering me to be a commander of the Order of the British Empire. Would I like it? And you have to tick a box to say whether you do want it or you don't want it. And I was rather frightened after I'd ticked it, because I thought, oh, I wish I'd kept a copy of that, because I might have ticked the wrong box, and they might not give it to me. And you have to keep it quiet. You're not allowed to mention it. And it was 6 weeks before it was announced. So that was quite a long time to keep a very important secret.
Do they give a reason for the award?
Yes, they said it was for broadcasting and charity services.
Yeah. You say you haven't really had awards before. Years ago, you were Lord Lieutenant of Infor Great.
No, I'm not Lord Lieutenant. I am a Deputy Lieutenant of London, but I am the representative Deputy Lieutenant of the Royal Borough of Kingston-on-Thames, and so I represent the Lord Lieutenant in that borough.
So what does that actually mean?
Well, it means that I have a marvellous uniform, and if the Queen comes, or any of the Royal Family comes, I have to put my uniform on to greet them and to look after them. I parade the judges, because we have a county court in Kingston, and I also command the Remembrance Day parade, and I make the mayor, and do all sorts of civic duties within the Royal Borough. And I must say, it's been a very attractive job that I've had now for 13 years. So I'm quite used to Kingston, and Kingston's quite used to me.
You were born in London. Do you come from a privileged background?
No, not at all.
But the reason I ask is because of your voice. You've got such English.
Yes, I just happened to. I've been lucky enough to have a mother and father who were keen that we should speak properly. And all three brothers, only one brother surviving, sadly. My eldest brother, Dudley, died when he was 37, a very long time ago. And my brother John, who is a television director, producer, he has an almost identical voice to mine, different mannerisms, but same quality of voice. So we certainly didn't come from a privileged background. My father was an importer of fruit. I went to a secondary school, and didn't stay at school very long, but I've always been interested in the sound of voices. Yeah. So I suppose I've always been interested in the way words were spoken. And when I was brought up as a boy, we used to, you know, used to have to read poetry at school, and you used to have to read out words, and they cared at my school about the way you spoke. So I suppose it was my parents and my school.
Yeah. How did you get into broadcasting?
Well, I got into broadcasting when I was in the Navy. I used to do impersonations, and when I got into the Navy, I managed to get a broadcast in a program called Navy Mixture, which was run by the BBC for naval personnel and, of course, other listeners, because it was a very amusing program. And I got a broadcast on this, doing my impersonations, and a commander from the Admiralty was there, and he said that he thought that my impersonations were awful, but the way I introduced them was so good, I ought to be an announcer.
Yeah.
And blow me, he had me transferred from HMS Valkyrie, which was a boarding house on the front at Douglas in the Isle of Man, but it was a ship, so-called, a shore-based ship. And I was transferred to the Admiralty and put into an office with a young lieutenant called John Pertwee, and together we formed the naval section of Forces Radio. I then, after a time, was sent out to a radio station in Colombo in Sri Lanka, Ceylon as it was then, called Radio SEAC, Southeast Asia Command. And I worked on that station and stayed there for 2 years. Had a roommate called Desmond Carrington, who presents all-time greats on Radio 2 on Sundays. And we had a fine radio station, and it was great to be there. It was a great experience. And I came back when I was demobilised and joined the BBC as a newsreader. After a short while, I got the sack. because I used to laugh during the news bulletins, and they didn't like that. So I got the sack, but they started to employ me as a freelancer, and I've been freelancing for 50 years.
Yeah, I first remember you from Jukebox Jewelry, but when I first came to listen to you for your type of music was this, when you used to have the lunchtime show and the Saturday show.
Yes.
And I used to enjoy listening to those because I'd been brought up on the Beatles and rock music. And such
right.
Like. But yours was an educational show because you tell people so much about the background of the music.
Well, I know people did like that tremendously, and it was very popular. And of course, I was very sad when they were taken off. But the BBC decided in its infinite wisdom that they knew better, that they thought it was appealing to an older audience, and they wanted to get a younger audience. What they didn't realise was that there were lots of people young like yourself who liked that sort of music and were learning from it.
Yeah. Is the story true that you went to Melody Radio and your listeners went with you?
Well, I didn't stay there for very long, but my listeners, yes, did come over to Melody Radio, yeah. But it was only London-based, and I only did about 7 or 8 weeks on Melody.
Yeah. Nowadays, like I think last night you had a show on the radio too. Is that a regular thing?
Yes, Saturday nights I'm on at 9:30, and I'm going to be on Sunday nights as well from 10 till 11 in the autumn.
Do you think it's Radio 2 is less because you're not there regularly doing that kind of music? Because I used to listen to Alan Dell,
yes.
Benny Green and yourself.
That's right.
And it was like a triumvirate.
Yes. And dear Alan Dell, whose programme I was lucky enough to caretake for about 18 months, when he died, they decided that the programme should come off, and so they took it off. And I think it's very sad because his listeners were faithful to the programme and stayed with me. We didn't lose any listeners, but they decided to take it off. They do very strange things, but I suppose they know best.
Listening to your show introduced me to Les Miserables.
Oh, right.
And then onto other musicals.
Yes.
And you seem to be a champion of that type of music. And that type of music seems to have taken over from the type of music that you were doing before.
Well, I've always been very fond of musicals. In fact, show music is what I'm best attracted to. I love it. I really love show musicals, right back from the turn of the century, perhaps, when Cole Porter and George Gershwin and people like Irving Berlin and Rodgers and Hart were writing their musicals. I mean, not until the turn of the century, but in the 20s and 30s. Those musicals are wonderful. I mean, for example, I see that Crazy for You is coming to Birmingham, yeah. Or if it's not already here.
It's just started.
Yeah. Just started already. Well, that's a great show, and it was a lovely run at the London Prince Edward Theatre, and now it's going to have a lovely run here.
Yeah. On one of your, we're in Birmingham now, on one of your shows, you've done a show from the Symphony Hall.
Yes.
And you remarked how fantastic it was and how found how much you enjoyed Birmingham.
I do. I've had a long association with Birmingham. I used to do a programme many years ago called Bright Lights on radio from the old studios in, I think it was Hagley Road or somewhere like that. I've forgotten the name of the street now, but at the old studios I used to come up every week on the train with Al McCogan, who was doing another programme. And I have to tell you how long ago it was. It was when I was the first person in Britain to play Bill Haley's Rock Around the Clock. And that was before the 2 years before the film came out. So if people are film buffs and know rock and roll, 2 years before Jailhouse Rock was produced, I played Rock Around the Clock on the radio from Birmingham. And I think this new Symphony Hall is magical. It's one of the most beautiful symphony halls in Britain, if not the most beautiful.
So what's the future for you now? I know you might say I've had a long career, but what's the future?
Well, I do lovely concerts like this. I was doing another concert, a classical music concert last night at Coton Hall, or rather Coton Court near Stratford-on-Avon at Ulster. And I'm off to do several of those for the next 5 or 6 weeks on Saturdays. And every Sunday through the summer, I go to Jersey to present a show called Our Kind of Music at the Opera House. And that's a musical show, of course. And then when I finish with that in September, I start going around the country to small theatres presenting a show called Name Dropping, which is me literally telling stories about famous people. It's a one-man show, and I enjoy doing that very much. It's a couple of hours, rather a long time, but with an interval, and a pianist who breaks it up by playing one or two musical illustrations. So, and the other radio shows that I'm going to do, and I'm going to go up to Yorkshire on Thursday to record some more countdown programs. And they've got a program there that they want me to do a pilot for. So I may get a new television show next year. So all is well.
Yeah, well, I've been asked to tell you, never retire. You have so many fans.
Thank you very much for saying so. Could I just say to all those people listening, I know just how important radio is to you, and, of course, how important voices are. And I've made a lot of friends who are cyclists, and I remember one day sitting in Bristol up at Clifton by the Camera Obscura, and I was sitting talking to my wife, who was sitting next to me on a bench, and there was a person with a guide dog sitting there, and she turned round and she said, "Oh, David," she said, "it's you." She said, "I've been listening to you for such a long time, and now I'm sitting listening to you in the park. I can't tell you what your voice means to me." So I realized then that, it's very good to have so many friends who are just at the other end of a piece of wire. And that's where you are at this minute. And I'm sitting here sending you my love. My love to you all. Bye.
Thank you.